We would like to welcome to the podcast a new sponsor for 2025, HRO Adventures. Rusty and Jackie run the ultimate outdoor adventure location outside of Cooley City, Washington. Rusty provides world-class guided mule deer hunts, guided or DIY pheasant hunts, and other upland bird hunts too. If you have a special occasion coming up, a special corporate outing that you would like to set up, or a place that you would like to do your own private group training, give Rusty a call today. He specializes in the custom experience. Everything from hunting to bird watching you can find at HRO Adventures. Look them up at hroadventures.com and hiddenranchoutfitters.com. Tell them Dave sent you. All right, welcome back to the morning at the cabin. How are you doing, Rusty?
It's a cold morning, isn't it?
It's a chilly morning. I think I saw 16 degrees out there on the gauge.
Yeah, so. It was 7 in the truck.
Ooh, yikes. Well, it was toasty in the cabin, so thanks again for putting me up.
I'm glad we're in here.
Yeah. Well, hey, we talked and recorded a little bit last night about what it is to be a rancher. And as we move forward with HRO Adventures, kind of building on, you know, who we are and who you are and what you're about. It was very interesting to read about listen to the lifestyle, all the different parts that go with it that I don't think people realize, right? There's animal management, there's politics, resource management, right? There's different equipment and repairs and things. And it just seems like kind of one of the ultimate team sports. I know riding around in the truck with you, I've seen, other farmers or ranchers as we drive down some of the farm roads that, everybody stops, everybody talks, everybody waves. I've seen, hey, you need help with that. I'll be down there on Thursday to help you out. And I see this sort of mutual support that is in this sort of community and this lifestyle, which is pretty neat. So I just really interesting how it is a kind of a team sport and, not only you, but your landowning neighbors and stuff. You guys take care of each other. So just thought that was pretty neat, and I don't think many people know that. So in addition to a busy lifestyle of ranching, which involves helping your brothers you were talking about with farming and everything, how the heck do you have time to be an outfitter? How did you end up as an outfitter?
Well, it's kind of fun. You know, on my dad's side of the family, both his grandparents homesteaded here. And so by having that, you know, those guys homestead, you had these two big families coming together. And over the years, as they built their farms and ranches around here and people got older, people started moving away, but then they would come back because this is where the family roots were. Dad being a farmer up here and pretty successful at doing what he was doing and getting larger. We had more and more family that kept coming back to go hunting. And so deer season was always a big family time. Mom would have, we'd have campers and tents and everything in the yard, and everybody came and ate, and they were here for, you know, the 2 weeks of hunting season. And it got to be cousins and uncles and aunts going, hey, Rusty, you guys are around here all the time. You're living around here. You're moving cattle. You're doing this and that. Where have you seen the deer? Where have you seen this? Where can we go do this? And how does this work? And then my friends from school, you know, I grew up with a .22 and then it was a shotgun. And and so my friends in school would come out and we would go, the funnest thing when I was in high school was we'd go jump shoot ducks. Didn't even have a driver's license yet, but you take the old farm trap wagon and dad would let us run around and go to all the pastures, and we would sneak up on the little ponds and puddles out there that had five or six ducks on it. We'd sneak up in the sagebrush and jump shoot this lake and get a couple ducks and then go to the next one. And that was a Saturday for me when I was a kid during
wow.
the season.
Sounds fun.
And so you just kind of started taking your friends and they started looking to you to take them out. And then, as we got married, cousins and them were getting married, all of a sudden there was more and more people, and it was putting a lot of pressure on us to try to help people get out and get having fun. And then there was too many of them for the 2 weeks of hunting season.
Yeah.
Who gets to go and who doesn't get to go. And it just got awkward and got very tough doing that because of the friends and family. And, So in 2000, we decided to shut it all down and that we would only take guided hunts. So we just pretty much ticked off everybody in the whole world. The things that, so that's how I became an outfitter was, it was a way of managing the game on our farm and managing our time and managing what was happening.
It was like out of necessity, it sounds like.
Well, a little bit of that. It was hard in the aspect of, you know, some of the friends and family. You know, I'd guided for 15 years just mm-hmm. for fun. And now all of a sudden they're not coming, you know, and I've got all this, all these memories and things with those guys. And so anyway, that's how you become an outfitter on a family farm. And then, we did that for a year or two. And then from that point, as the business part of it started to come together, then, mm-hmm. That's when you started working with the neighbors. You had neighbors that don't hunt their property. They only allow, you know, they just let other people hunt. But they, through the years, they had different things. And so we just started collecting neighbors' property and getting larger that way. And then we started having more clients than we had property and game to shoot. So then we had to go work at getting leases and do things. And so the business kind of just grew organically, shall we say.
Yeah, sounds like it, yeah.
But yeah, becoming an outfitter was, you were already doing the job, you know, now we just do it for, mm-hmm. we do it as a business. And that's how it all got started. My brothers, they did all the same things I did growing up. They guided, they took family members out and did everything. When we first started this, they were just like me. They were part of it, and they did their, they had their piece, and mm-hmm. they guided, and they took people out, or they patrolled, or whatever. And but as it went on, it became something. Maybe I don't like the pressure of taking people hunting that I don't know.
Yeah, everybody wants to be an outfitter until it's time to be an outfitter, right? There's a lot that goes into it.
Yep.
And first in, last out, and you got stuff to clean. And I mean, it doesn't end when people get dropped off at the cabin, right? There's
Work
to be done. So what kind of stuff are people coming out for in the cabin? We've got tons of mule deer pictures and stuff like that. What kind of mule deer, size-wise, for people that are listening? Like, what's sort of an average, or what can people expect? I mean, these are pretty... pretty neat animals that we see pictures and skulls and antlers. I mean, these are no slouches. So what kind of numbers for the guys that like numbers and stuff? What are we looking at?
I hate to give away trade secrets or
anything.
There you
go. Yeah.
But the stuff that gets mounted on the wall are usually the best, the biggest, the ones that, you know, as you're seeing some of the pictures mm-hmm. around, though, as I was showing you around the cabin you were mentioning, mm-hmm. I did notice, and it kind of comes up in the conversation, those pictures now, that's a little more representative of what you can expect, because those are memory pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
The pictures that we put up were, the hunt was funny, the
time together
was cool, or whatever. Mm-hmm. There was something special about that made it a picture worthy and put it up. I was told and taught long, long time ago. I went on my first guided hunt ever, and I better not say the year, because then everybody would know just how old I am. But a long time ago, and I was told at that time, my dad gave me a camera and said, "You better take pictures of everything, whether you want to or not. You take pictures of everything, and when you think you're done taking pictures, take 10 more."
Boy, great advice.
It came down to, you know, that ram, that deer, that elk, that moose, whatever we were hunting at the time, it'll never have a skin on again. It'll never be in this valley again. It'll never be, you may never be back here again. And all you're going to have is the memories mm-hmm. that you have. All of us hunters, I believe this is every hunter. I don't, you know, whether you're a good hunter or a bad hunter, but I think every hunter is out there for the experience. The kill is such a small part of it. And so, yes, that's the finality that we're all looking for. But it's not.
But it's years of the tale of how that animal was tracked or whatever, right? So,
the pictures are
passed down, and
the pictures are the main thing. Yeah. I mean, and as I look back at mine, I'm going, "Holy cow! I had brown hair."
Exactly.
You know, and so those are the fun things. But when you come out here, the mule deer is what we started with. Mm-hmm. It's what I'm passionate about. There's a company out there called Muley Freak, and I am a representative for them without even knowing any of them. But I just love mule deer hunting. It's interesting to me. It's what we have around here, and I like it. We have been doing this long enough since 2000, so you can see this will be our 26th season coming up, and we've been doing it long enough now that we're starting to see some of that management come back.
There's a management piece to this too, there right? Is. We're not just shooting for the sake of shooting. You've got animals and locations that you're thinning out or letting grow or whatever, right? There's a full management program going on, which is very interesting.
So I try to tell the hunters, especially the ones that are, you know, looking for something to hang on the wall, or they're, you know, they want, you know, they want that typical mule deer frame and looking thing. And so they've kind of got this picture in their mind, and they want to see that out there when they're hunting. So we try to keep our harvest around that nothing less than 3 years old. We like to have the four at the bottom, but we understand once in a while we're going to shoot a 3 year old buck, and up. Now, without getting too deep into the politics, I'm not a big 3-pointer better fan. I think it has a purpose and a use, but it's not a permanent solution, and we've proven that. The problem is, I don't think there's anybody that's got the gumption inside the department to change it and get off of it, because now it's a moneymaker.
Interesting.
And so, but we're seeing the negative results of the mismanagement of the 3-pointer better. So we have now, just in the last five seasons that we've had here, we have killed 8 9-year-old bucks that are inferior, that are absolute basic 2-point frame. But with the way the regulations are written, with if it has a 1-inch point, that counts. So the eye guards will count. We're seeing these big monster 2 points that'll all of a sudden 1 year will have good habitat, and they'll grow that extra point, or they'll fork at the top. Especially when they get older, their horns start, you know, getting more character.
Yeah, there's one over there on the wall with a crown on it, which was cool that we learned about.
The top. Yep, you saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, they'll get that extra point that makes them legal to shoot. And we've taken them out of the gene pool. The problem is they bred for 8 years or 7 years, and now that gene is out there. And so we're encouraging that.
Interesting.
But I would say that, you know, mainly when you come out here, you're going to see legal bucks, and you're going to be able to shoot something that's in that mature category, that 3 years and up or 4 years and up. So you're going to see something that's not, it's going to be a bigger bodied animal, bigger chested, bigger butt.
I was just thinking they are beefy.
Meat
animals.
And, you know, we have kids. So once in a while, we'll take a kid out for kind of a management type deal and shoot one of these younger bucks that we know is an inferior deal. And when they're hanging inside the shed next to one of the hunter's ones, you know, you're looking at 80 pounds difference in hanging weight, you know, 100 pounds difference in
yeah, these
weight.
Are broad deer that are in here.
Yeah.
Just really neat specimens. So,
and you know, some of the deer you're looking at here, you know, we got 2 bucks sitting right here above us as we're talking on the radio or on the podcast here. Those bucks were shot a mile apart.
Yeah.
10 years apart.
Really? Wow.
And you can see the characteristics of the gene pool.
Sure can. Yeah.
10 years apart. And, you know, those bucks probably never knew each other. But they were, and they were only a mile from each other when we shot them.
Yeah. Neat stories behind every one of them, you know? So. Getting into some gear, because there's always kind of gear junkies and stuff out there. So You do rifle and you do bow, right, for yep. different seasons.
And muzzleloader.
And muzzleloader. So starting with rifles, what kind of ranges can people expect to shoot at? And what kind of rounds make sense to you? And it's always kind of open to personal interpretation, but I bet you people are coming with unique firearms as well, right? So what kind of stuff are you seeing that you like? What do you not like?
Yeah. Hunters are all over the board. I mean, there's some hunters that are very, you know, grandpa shot a Winchester, so I have to yep. shoot a Winchester.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I see that.
Yeah, and then there's the next guy that, you know, I don't care as long as it goes bang and I can buy mm-hmm. shells at the local convenience
That's
store.
That's right,
And
yeah.
so we had a hunter that came with, he did not like a scope.
And really? So just iron sight guy?
Iron sights.
Okay.
You want to talk about a rifle hunt out here in the plateau when everything's been hunted for a month and a half already by a bow hunter or... Mm-hmm. And then you're trying to get an open sight guy in close enough to...
Yeah. And there's not much to hide behind out here, too, right?
It's different, a lot of fun.
Different kind of land. So.
And that guy has hunted with us for several years, and he's put three or four on the wall. And so, you know, everybody's kind of got their own deal. The average shot, I tell everybody that comes out here, is you need to shoot 200-300 yards.
Oh, okay.
And so when you're out there practicing, you need to be, you know... banging some steel or putting some holes in some targets, 250, 300.
Okay.
And if you can do that, we're gonna get you a shot.
Nice.
And so that's what I tell everybody. Now, in 25 years of doing this, the long range shooting guys that are on TV and mm-hmm. they've made that very, very popular. And long range shooting is something you can do year round. You can
yeah.
do it every day
it's
of the
fun.
Year.
It's different. It's fun. Good it's skill builder. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely, it's a humbling experience. If you haven't tried it yet, go out and try it. And
yeah, you're your own worst enemy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it is self-critiquing, as we would say. Yeah, there's no lying or cheating. The target doesn't lie, right?
I did have a hunter ask me to move back one time that the deer was too close because him and his buddy had a bet. And those things never go good for outfitters when there's a bed over the fire,
yep.
you know, the fire pit.
But oh, yeah.
They had the bet who was going to shoot their buck the farthest. And the funny thing was the missed. He missed out there at the long range shot.
Oh.
And when he shot over it, the deer came to us. Because, you know, it was far yeah. enough out there, didn't know where we were, and... Shooting out here on the plateau, a lot of times that if it echoes at all or moves around, that
yeah.
the deer's going to go to his escape area. Mm-hmm. He's not going to go where the sound was or whatever.
Yeah.
And he came to us, so he went from way out there to about 250.
Oh.
And he was still coming, and the guy goes, "We're going to have to move back." And I says, "Well, we're not moving back.
We're going to do what?"
Yeah. So, but as far as the I tell everybody, because I get that's a very common question for outfitters, is what caliber do I need to bring? I would just as soon you brought a caliber that's legal in the state of Washington, so a 240 or better, and, you know, a gun that weighs less than 16 pounds, so we're all legal on the firearm, and that you shot a lot. That's my main thing. I don't
yeah.
really care what caliber
two
it is.
Or 300 yards, man. You can find that at the local range, right? That's not a 700 yard. They don't do that.
You don't have to go to a special place.
You can practice, yeah.
Yeah.
And then people come into town. You usually have them sight in and get prepped or can, right? We've got the property that you can get
pretty common
tutored
around
up. Yeah.
You go to an outfitter these days. Doesn't matter if you're going to Alaska or Africa.
Yeah.
They're gonna ask you to shoot that gun before they
yeah out. Make sure everything's dialed in
and so there's a many reasons to do it.
Oh sure,
the,
sure.
The most important is that the gun's clean, the bullet went down and exited the barrel.
Yeah,
and
nothing got banged around.
It was supposed to.
I hunted years ago with a few years ago with a buddy up in the Okanagan, and he wanted to get back into it after many years of not being into it, and I had been scouting that area, so I'm like, well, I'll take you and show you what I know, right? It's just a fun thing. And as we're at the tailgate, taking the scope out of the box and putting it on the rifle, I realized, so this is, the preparation wasn't done, right? You don't just arrive and start opening stuff. And so we had a long discussion, not berating or anything, but it was like, I guess we weren't on the same wavelength that you needed to be hiking and practicing and having a fitness thing, because there's a lot of vertical. Well, I'm going to set my tent up there, and I'm thinking, you know what the winds are going to do tonight? Like, hey, you know, my fault for not explaining this more in detail. When you said you wanted to shoot, I assumed the wrong stuff, right? My fault. But we should have worked at the range. We should have worked through your equipment, done some hiking at home long before we went up into these, you know, valleys and up. And he's ranging stuff, and we're going to chase it. And he's got everything in the kitchen sink hanging off like a little Cub Scout, right? The boots swinging. I'm thinking, how new are those boots? They don't look like, yeah, they're brand new. Ah, gee, man, did I ever set you up for failure? I should have had a program for you long before we drove out here. And we had a blast and started shedding gear as we were moving. I don't know how many spike camps we made, but had a great time. He learned tons that I think you could have lectured it and it wouldn't have come across. But he's like, okay, I didn't need six cans of fuel for one night. I could do one. You know, you could go with a half. So anyway, I take full responsibility for I didn't ask enough questions. I assumed, kind of like with your fitness level, I assumed they could keep up with me, right? Yeah. And I've been, between Boy Scouts and my own scouting, hiking and snowshoeing year-round for many years, forgot that my buddy hadn't done this. And when we were putting the snowshoes on, that should have been an indicator. It's his first time on snowshoes. And I was not traveling at the speed of the slowest guy. I was doing my thing and then getting frustrated, and it got to the point where it was the, you know, hey, I think I see something, and it was like, you're taking a break. Like, you know what? I'm going too fast. It's my fault. You know, basic patrol squad tactics that you got to move with the slowest guy with the heaviest equipment, and I just started going. So I took full responsibility. We got him tutored up, and he ended up having a great hunt up in the alpine wilderness and stuff.
Nice. Nice.
Later on, but... But yeah, it was, he was a complete crap show, and it was my fault because I didn't help this guy out one bit to prep him, right? Picked him up, we drove, and I thought, boy, I should have done a lot better with this guy. Yeah. So it was pretty funny, but.
Well, I've hunted with this one family for years, and the dad was a big, he was a big fan of the Model 7s.
Oh.
They were a little short. You know, a little short that you can buy the 12-inch pull on the stock, and it's smaller, and the kids. And so he was teaching all of his kids to with these Model 7s. Excuse me. And so I had taken his older children out. Well, and the comment had been early on in years prior that maybe, you know, you didn't buy all your Model 7s in the same caliber.
Mm-hmm.
So you always got to check. Well, his youngest came the next time. And like I said, the family had been here before and hunted with us many times. And I've hunted with all of this sibling's, sisters. And it was his first time to go hunting. And they showed up at midnight. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to go put up the, and go shooting.
Yeah.
Everybody's in bed. They showed up, they stayed. But they got up and they wanted to go hunting the next morning. So fine, we get up and I take them because I've hunted with them before. I get everybody else out. And I take him out and we're just getting this boy his first deer. And we sneak up on this deer. And he, as we were leaving the pickup, I told him, nothing in the chamber. Just put him in the magazine. We'll load it when we get there.
Okay.
And so we get there. We're sneaking up on this deer. We get up on everything. This was a really nice setup. The rock.
I don't
was
like
the
where this is
wave.
Going.
And I get the boy up to the rock, and he's standing there, and Dad's right behind me, and the deer are out there, and don't even know we're there. And he's, and I says, okay, go ahead and put one in. And he runs the bolt back on that Model 7, and as he comes up, he can't close the bolt. Mm-hmm. It's just tight. And so I'm watching him, and so I notice that he's having troubles. And finally, he reaches up, and he just hammers that bolt down, and it closes. Okay. So I don't say anything, but I'm thinking. And we aim at the deer out there, and he shoots, and nothing. No dust comes up. Deer don't run. Deer doesn't die. It's just nothing. The gun just went off, but we don't know. And... he looks over at me and I says, "You're going to have to shoot again. I have no idea." He goes, "Was I high or low?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "There was no dust or anything. There should have been dust." So he runs another shell in. And this time when he runs it in, he doesn't even try to close the bolt. He just runs it up there and then just hammers it down with his hand. And he's, by this time, adrenaline's flowing and he pulls back down on this deer. And I couldn't believe anything. Nothing ran off either. And he pulls back down on the deer and he shoots. And he shoots, I don't know, 5 feet left and probably 3 feet low.
Oh, no.
And I saw that bullet hit. And the first thing went through my mind was, we have a loose scope here. Mm-hmm. The scope's coming off, or we've got some screws loose. Got
banged around or something.
Yeah, yep. Something got banged around in the deal. And so I immediately reach over and I says, "Is the scope loose?" And I reach over and I try the scope and nothing's loose. And he brings that shell out and he puts another shell in. And this time the deer all bunch up and they're weren't that something's wrong.
They're just as confused.
He closes that bolt that third time and he shoots. And it lands halfway between us and the deer. Deer was maybe 150 yards and it lands 70 yards out there, hits the dirt. And,
not good.
And I said, "We're done." And I said, "We're going to go back to the house and put up target and shoot because there's something. We got to figure out what's wrong." And so we back out. The deer kind of move off and we back out. We're driving back to the house and I look up and the boy is just down.
Yeah, sure.
And his dad's kind of frustrated, and his dad reaches in his pocket. And as we're driving in the pickup, his dad reaches in his pocket and grabs the box of shells and throws it up on the dash of the pickup. And I look over there and I went, "Those say 243. And he goes, "Yeah."
Oh, no.
And the kid goes, and I says, "Are you shooting 243? And he goes, "Yeah, that's what I shoot." And I said,
"What's the barrel say?"
"Well, your sister was here 2 years ago, and she was shooting a 280.
Oh, boy.
And, or a 7mm.08. And he goes, "Well, this is my gun. That was my sister's gun." Well, in the middle of getting out the door and leaving at 7, 8 o'clock at night, whenever they left to get here by midnight, he went in and grabbed out of the safe and grabbed his sister's gun.
Yep.
And so we had to go to town and get the right shells for the gun. And so we were throwing 243s down a 284 barrel.
Cow.
And they were just flying wherever they wanted. And
let me guess, now you inspect everybody's stuff, right?
I try not to.
Maybe
to
quietly,
I try to do it quietly. Yeah. And basically we solve a lot of that problem just by going out here and, And a lot of these guys don't like shooting paper. I mean, I don't like shooting paper. I'm a lot more, I'm a better hunter than I am a target shooter.
Yeah.
And so we've got 8-inch gongs that we shoot in 100 yards. And if you can ring an 8-inch gong in 100 yards.
Instant feedback.
I'm pretty happy and it builds confidence and it's good.
And everything's working. Yeah. And it's super fun. I do a lot of handgun shooting bays and stuff. And there's just something about that report that kicks off there. You get instant feedback, right?
Yep.
Especially if you painted them. Now you got a visual.
You got a visual.
And again, it's like kind of like the long range guy. The guy standing next to you sees what you did. And I've done a couple competitions. 50 people see where you hit. There's no hiding it.
Yeah.
It's super humbling. Luckily everybody's on the same page. Everybody's been there. But there's no BS in it or trying to brag a little bit or embellish the story. Everybody sees where you're pulling to the left and low, and you're like, okay. So it must be, I'm not a golf guy, but it must be what golfers, if they're just playing against themselves, right? It doesn't really matter what's going on. And I find that with archery, it's quiet. I like the quiet, I think, based on just the noise with my everyday job. But, arrow tells a tale,
Oh, baby.
And I've done some slow speed filming where you watch that thing come off and barrel roll, and it is not a straight line to the target. And some of my ranges are based on I got to get that arrow up to speed first so it's stabilized, right? So I can't come inside either. And I always equate it to, this is probably what my golf buddies enjoy about golf, is you're making tweaks and you're your own worst enemy. Yep. And the moment you think you got it nailed, something goes sideways, right? So,
well, every golfer
super
goes
humbling.
Every golfer goes to the range.
Yep.
You know, yep. They shoot 100 golf balls before they get out there on the course.
Make it or break it. Yeah. Yep. Favorite rifle. What favorite rifle do you like to hunt with?
Well, I have, I for whatever reason, I fell in love with the 7mm STW round.
Wow.
Years and years ago, which is just an 8mm case necked down to a 7mm mm-hmm. bullet. And it's, you know, it got popular there for a while. And then now all of a sudden, powder's hard to get and nobody wants to burn that much powder.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, the short mags and other things have come into play, the PRC now.
Yep,
things.
Yep.
But I still have my 7mm STW. Prior to that time, my dad, when I graduated high school, you can tell how much of a freak I was by then because my dad gave me a custom-built rifle for graduation.
Wow.
So, you know, and so I shot 7mm for quite a while before I stepped up to my next custom rifle 20 years later was an STW. And I've shot the 7mm bullet forever.
Okay.
Now, as I'm getting older, and
and that shoulder smarts a little bit,
and that 6-pound STW that I had built for the mountains, I don't do that as much anymore, and go hiking and go 10 miles in and all that stuff like we used to. My pickup carries my rifle for me, so
there you go.
I'm not
That's pretty cool.
The weight,
yeah. So
my scopes got heavier and everything else, but I have went down in caliber, but I can't get away from the 7mm bullet. I just love it. So I shoot a 280 Ackley now.
Okay.
And those are just, you know, like I said, I'm not a target shooter, but you know, you start looking at coefficients and the efficiency of burning powder.
Yeah.
And still
Coriolis having, effect, all that good stuff.
And
right?
good energy out there at 500-600 yards, which I am not a good long range shooter. So 500-600 yards is probably, you know, comfortable to for me, but you get out there to the 1,000. I've rang the bell at 1,000, but
have you? Nice.
I'm not good at it. Let's
yeah,
just put that
I
way.
Want to
I'm
do
not,
that
I'm
every
not
day.
Home
yeah.
with any trophies or
yeah.
ribbons. Let's put
exactly.
It that way. So
cool. Yeah, I grew up with and I've always loved the 270.
Yeah,
and just the way it flies, just the way it is. I mean, 30-06 is neat. 308's really neat. I like that. But yeah, just there's a something romantic with the 270 and the way grandpa shot it and dad shot it and I shot it. And I remember as a little tiny kid being knocked over by shooting it because it was way more power than I needed as a kid.
Yeah.
But I got taught how to use it and got chances to shoot it. You know, shot it in Alabama for whitetails and hunting with dogs and then have shot it in the Northwest as well. Just a neat round, just kind of cool. Just hard to improve on. I like the way it flies. So I don't know, just something I like. By no means an expert, just kind of just cool. I like it. So, all right. Well, how about bow hunting? What kind of, you were going to have to stalk so much closer with that. And it's unique as I look out the window, right? There is not a lot to hide behind. You're hiding behind the bow maybe.
Well,
how's that go when you have folks come in for that?
Camo does make a difference.
Not wearing bright orange, right?
Just
not that the deer
say,
see it, but yeah.
And I was the lone holdout on camo around here because I am not paying $200 for a pair of pants.
It's just crazy.
I can't imagine paying $200 for a pair of pants, and yet my daughter spends $100.
Don't even get me started.
Don't even go there. Yeah, I got you. And
I'll be working till I'm 90.
Exactly. And then it has a hole in the knee already.
Comes
she
with
didn't
holes.
Even put it in herself.
I can put those for you put those in the garage for you. Come on.
And so, but I just held out. So you know, I was the Walmart camo guy for I don't know. Years and years and years.
Well, how come Fred Bear and these other guys are hunting in a red flannel shirt and doing well? They didn't have any ghillie suits or anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Grandpa didn't have any camo that I remembered. It was sort of a duck cloth briar pants, which I have even seen, but they were like the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys did well. I know the populations were different, but maybe overthinking the whole camo thing. I'm not sure.
Well, and I think
it's pretty unique.
You know, Fred Bear when he would go into those wilderness hunts. I'm just going to throw it out there. I think a lot of his animals had never seen people before.
Yeah. Yeah, so, he had some unique places, right? Yeah,
very unique, mm-hmm. very remote, first timers kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Places where the game is not expecting anything, and so there's almost a curiosity to, I'll let you stand there for a second.
Yeah, trying to figure you out. Yeah,
yeah. And so, but I don't know all of that, and even at that, you still have to be a good hunter.
You have to
I'm
be
not
good.
Saying he was not good at sneaking because
that's
he had
the thing. He was probably pretty sneaky. Yeah, yeah.
And he had to. He had to. You know, that's the thing about hunting out here is you have to, if you've ever sat at the airport and watched people walk by.
Oh, yeah.
You
I've how spent a couple hours doing that.
That was not even, I didn't even think about that day. But yeah.
You ever sit at the boat launch and watch people back their boats that they don't know what they're doing? Well, that's the airport that's for the me airport, is the boat yeah. launch. Grab a coffee, sit back and watch the show. People get to the curb and lose their marbles.
And so, yeah. It's the same, you know, it's the same out here. You got to understand the flick of the tail, the turn of the head, the what the look, you know, the stomp of the foot, the blowing.
Yep.
You got to understand the animal you're hunting, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's why a guide is so important. You know, I got.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth the price of admission because they're not cutting any corners, but the amount of data that they've collected doing this so many times
absolutely
will make this experience better. It doesn't mean makes the hunt better or get your animal, the entire envelope of this trip will be on a different level of expertise.
So much more
you will become, you will learn in the process, right? It's the best tutoring you could ever get.
Absolutely. So could I do this by myself? Probably.
Yeah, sure. And I'll spend the next 6 years walking around with my bow, never even knocking an arrow as I begin to learn what a guy could kind of expedited a little bit so we all have more fun. I'm a total DIY guy, just love learning, and I'm a sponge, so I get that aspect.
So the bow hunting around here is, it's a different mindset, and so...
How far out are they shooting the bow on these?
We tell everybody that you need to be proficient at 40.
At 40, okay, and that's not unrealistic, okay.
And you need to be able to have, you need a 50-yard pin.
Yeah, okay. That's reasonable and a good goal to be practicing at.
40 is what we're going to always go to. We want to be right around that 40, between 30 and 50. If we get them within that envelope between 30 and 50, we can usually get a good shot off without the deer knowing we're there, or get them to stand still, take the arrow kind of thing. You get them inside 30, I mean, any little movement, any little sound makes them just jumpy as all get out.
Oh, yeah.
And so have we killed them inside 30? Absolutely. And we've killed them past 40 as well. But that's the envelope. 30 to 50 is what we're always gaming.
What kind of broadheads make sense to you? What do you like? What do you see?
Some of the guys like to shoot some pretty heavy stuff. That doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah, that's kind of where I went. I went lighter and faster till my arrows got unstable. And then I realized this isn't a speed game. I need the punch. So I backed them back. That slowed them down and heavied them up again, right? And it was like, I was going the wrong way trying to be fast. And we got unstable. And so as I filmed them in slow motion, they start tumbling.
Yeah.
So my aerodynamic knowledge was, you know, I was too smart for my own good.
And I'm a guy,
made them heavier again. So
I'm a guy that, especially for the deer around here, I like the heavy arrows for the punch.
Mm-hmm.
But the 100 grain head is good enough.
Yeah.
It's going to do plenty of damage when it gets there. So lighter on the head, heavier on the arrow. I see guys go the opposite way, and then the arrows get unstable. You get this great big heavy thing on the outside. You don't have enough frame on the inside.
Yep.
Now the guys, it's not uncommon at all with the bows of today. When I took my first guy out, in 07, I think, was the first archery deer that we took out or guided. You know, he was shooting an old Martin bow.
I know which one it was. Yep.
That
got it at Sears, probably.
that arrow, when we killed that deer, when that arrow left, it went up.
Uh-huh.
And then dropped in on that and we were in a really crazy spot. We were nailed down. We couldn't move, and the deer hid in some tules. We had snuck into a lake and got caught out in the open, and so the deer came in on the trail before we could get to a spot to, so we couldn't draw. Walks right by us, gets to the pond. The doe that was with him came right over, was 10 feet from me, smelled me, and jumped into the lake.
Oh, wow.
This little pond we were at just jumped into the lake. Well, that scared everything around the
lake. Oh, sure it did.
And the buck ran into the tules. So we couldn't see him. He's only 50 yards away, but I can't see him. Well, the doe stood in the water 20 yards and sniffed and splashed around, and she just hated us. But we couldn't move, and we had no cover. And she finally leaves. It took an hour, and we were afraid to move, even though we couldn't see the buck. We were afraid to move that he could see us looking out of the tules. So we sat there for an hour on our leg. I remember my leg was so numb I couldn't stand up after we shot. But anyway, he comes out and finally takes a drink, and we got extremely lucky. Me and this hunter had been to a hunting show.
Oh.
Or to a gun show.
Okay.
Down in Reno, Nevada, together. About 8 months before this. And him and I decided that we would buy, and at that time it was a Leica rangefinder, and it wasn't like the little ones that you hold in your hand now. It went the other way.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody else would remember those. I still have them. I think they're antiques now. Anyway, we both bought one of those. Not knowing anything, that we bought them from the same guy. He went home and he's shooting his bow. I'm at my house shooting my bow. They were on meters.
Oh, yeah.
We did not know that it was on meters. And so we didn't even know how to change it from meters to yards. But they were on meters. Well, he gets there. We didn't even think about using the same rangefinder because his rangefinder for his bow,
yeah,
which is a really good thing to do. If somebody has been using their rangefinder,
mm-hmm,
use their rangefinder. This is an outfitter trick.
Yeah,
use their rangefinder for their bow that he's been shooting.
Hey, let's take a pause there, refill our coffee, and we'll continue on with the HRO Adventures podcast.
Sounds good.
All right, we're back with fresh cups of coffee.
All right. Yeah, that was a good break, I tell you.
So what kind of bow are you shooting?
So I shoot a Bowtech.
Okay.
And I had just bought that brand new Bowtech. And so him and I had shot a little bit before we went out. And this was first day of archery season. And that doe, she just hated us. Well, we got her gone and everything. An hour came by and the buck came back out, and when the buck came out, I ranged it, and I told him, you know, and we had shot 50 yards here a lot, because we always knew that's kind of what we were trying to do, and he got ready to pull, and I says, okay, and he goes, I need to get on my knee. I'm not going to be able to shoot sitting down. I'm going to have to shoot from my knees.
Yeah.
And so he wiggled around a little bit, and used me as a block so they didn't see as much motion, and he drew, and when I heard him draw, I was to give him the yardage, and he drew, and I pulled up, and it said 51, and of course, me and him thought that was 51 yards at the time, and he's like, oh, okay, and we'd already ranged around, kind of had an idea anyway, so he didn't surprise him. He was. And I said, you know, and the deer put his head down in the water, and
really,
you couldn't hardly see his eyes. That's why we chose that. There was a little trail through the tules, and he put his head down in the water, so he couldn't see our motion as well. And he drew. I said 51. He let the arrow go, and that arrow went way up in the air. And I thought, you know, I hadn't paid attention when we were shooting at targets out here in the lawn, and that thing dropped right in, just perfect. went passed through right through that buck. He went 30 yards and just tipped over. And I jumped up to give him a high five, and my right leg was so asleep that I couldn't stand up, and we stumbled around on that hillside. But we were so excited when we got over there, and it wasn't until he was back home in California, and he calls me up, and he goes, okay, you want to know how lucky we were? And I says, yeah, tell me how lucky we were. And he goes, my rangefinder that I, the new rangefinders we bought, he said, I just found out today it was set on meters. Yep. So here I have practiced all summer on meters, and then you tell me 51 yards.
Yeah, it's 167 feet.
I'm off. You know, you told me yards, and I was shooting meters. And, and so he goes, man, he said, we just got lucky and this, that, and the next thing. And I said, well, wait a minute. So while we were on the phone, I ran over and found my, got mine out of the safe and pulled it back out. Well, I said, no, we weren't. You want to talk about lucky? Mine's on meters too. So, but yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
Bow hunting out here is number one. It's our best season.
It is. Okay. The right timing in the calendar, huh?
Everything's perfect for it.
All right.
It's our best season to
come out
and
bow hunt,
to see the big ones. Absolutely. Yeah. And you'll see more deer. You may not get as many shot opportunities.
But I think archery people get that, right? That's part of the game.
So. Yeah. And we're averaging probably three or four stalks a day. And out of those three or four stalks, we will get within shooting range.
Wow.
At least once a day.
Awesome.
And so because of that, now some of our bow hunters are starting to be return customers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden our stalks are a little more, we're a little more picky which deer we stock on now. It used to be any legal buck we'd stock on everything.
That's all right.
Now all of a sudden we're like trophy hunting. It's kind of like, okay, well, this is going to be a little tougher.
Might go home empty-handed.
You might go home.
What was that whole don't pass on something that, you know, on the last day you wouldn't have passed on? And
but the days are really long during archery
they
season.
They are long here, aren't
first
they?
First of September. And we put targets up here in the yard. And so every afternoon after lunch, the guys pull out their bows. Everybody shoots.
Nice. That's so cool to see.
It's so,
so
warm.
Fun.
And so we don't do a lot. The deer are all down.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go back out in the afternoon, late afternoon, evening. But I've been laying here on the grass taking a nap on day three or day four of these archery hunts. And when you've been getting up at 3:30 and you're going to bed at 9:30 and you just ate and you can't sleep because you ate so late and different things. You get pretty tired. And so archery hunts are a marathon, more of a marathon. You got to kind of got to be in shape. You got to be expecting what you're doing.
Yep. Have some skills, be here. Practiced, you know, dialed in. Yeah.
I'm half asleep. And of course you got two buddies that went to high school together and they're 50 something now and they've been doing this forever and they love to bow hunt. Next thing you know, I'm laying down here and I was half asleep taking a nap in the grass. All of a sudden I heard an arrow go by. And I heard it hit a target, and I thought, who is shooting? And I turned around, and these guys are like 120 yards from the target, way over by the barn, shooting across the road, over a tree, into a target. And I said, I just kind of looked at him. I didn't say anything. I just kind of looked at him like, what is going on? And then all of a sudden, another arrow comes, and it hits over there. And pretty soon, I hear them chuckling and laughing. They're walking over to get their arrows. Yeah, they're like playing horse.
Yeah.
You know, they're
skill builder.
Skill builder.
I love
exactly.
It.
And I just was like, okay, well, no that wonder is, these guys are such good shots.
Yeah, that is fun.
Run around and play. But that's very cool. That's a bow hunter for you. Most bow hunters are passionate.
Yeah.
They love the
It's unique,
part.
Right?
And the
super
kills,
ethical
super cool.
shots and a lot of stuff you pass because you just don't, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny for me. I mean, I think I'm decent with the bow. The bow can outshoot me. The limit is my skill. And it's sometimes funny when the light bulb comes on that, you know, you got 70 pounds, whatever, the latest, you know, Hoyt, blah, blah, blah. I'm the, you know, you're the limit, right? The bow can certainly shoot out to 100, but I can't. You know what I mean? It's not accurate at that point or body mechanics or something. So, you know, my archery stuff, I do archery turkey is what I like, which is ridiculously difficult. You know, might as well just tie your hands behind your back, right? you know, 35, I'm perfect. 36, it ain't gonna work. Literally that specific. So it's just, and I'm, you know, amateur at best, but I love it in practice. And I've got a range at home that I can shoot at. And I've got an indoor and an outdoor range. That's how obsessive I have been with it. Constantly tweaking stuff. It's just, it's a lot of fun. So if anybody's kind of listening and new to archery and stuff, boys, it's something fun to try. And I got to warn you, it's addictive. You start getting in there.
Oh, it's super addictive.
Amount of things you can tweak and modify and constantly add to those bows to get rid of noise. And it's pretty neat. And some of the stuff that's out there is really cool.
I told my son, I said, before you buy a bow, just take my old bow and learn. Yeah, he went and showed it to the guy at the bow shop. And the guy started laughing and goes, so did you want me to put this in the museum?
Yeah, like showing up with a brick phone.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of like, well, no, we're not using a slingshot. This is a bow.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. Yeah. Boy, the technology on bows is really just
They're just, I don't know. Now. It's cool. You're your own worst enemy. Super humbling.
Yeah.
There are days I'll shoot. I have a little bucket of arrows, and there's days I'll shoot, and you're like, three of them are in the bullseye. I'm stopping now. Yeah. Why ruin the day, right? And there are days where you go through the whole bucket and you're just cussing at yourself because just why are these even, you know, why am I even trying? So it's neat, and bow hunters are neat people, and well, it's just, it's bow, a cool thing.
what's the term I'm looking for? Anyway, a disabled hunter. For a bow hunter. And so disabled hunter.
Crossbow or bow?
He could shoot a crossbow.
Okay.
Okay. And it's an every year you have to go, their doctor has to sign off every year. It's not a permanent deal. But he got the doctor to sign him off, and the Fish and Game gave him his deal. Well, he showed up with one of these Raven bows.
Yeah.
One of these brand new ones. Well, that little crossbow, I mean, it's only 13 inches
wide. Packs
a
little punch.
You know, and he's shooting like 450 feet per second. This thing that's heavier. And it costs more than my rifle and my Zeiss scope on my rifle.
Yeah, I did notice that. Like, yeah.
This is a crossbow. And, you know, and so, yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
The technology is out there. And that thing shot so fast. And, when he shot his deer at 20 yards, I was like, this thing, and it's like shooting a piece of rebar through something.
Yeah, it's a bolt, basically, right?
It's a bolt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes right on through. But it was fun. But
and those are unique to Washington, where it's a disabled hunter and some paperwork and a process. But you've accommodated quite a few of those folks over the years with different organizations. So if you got something like that, call Rusty, and he can find a way to make it work for you. So HRO Adventures, where the heck did the idea to start doing more of an adventure tours with some of the scenery and the geography and the animals and photographers that want to come out and research people that want to, you know, get placed on something for photography or whatever. Right. Where'd that come from?
Well, that, you know, it's funny how those stories are so much together. You know, Hidden Ranch Outfitters started because, you know, I'd grown up taking all my friends and family hunting. So I was already doing what now I have started a business with. HRO Adventures is basically right along the same pattern. People would come up and, you know, hey, just want to look around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've never seen country like this or whatever. Well, jump in the truck.
Yeah.
You know, 3-4 hours later, we've went around. Mm-hmm. We've looked over the Columbia River breaks. We've looked at Grand Coulee Dam. We've looked at old homesteads. We've looked at big barns. We've looked at mule deer. We've looked at sage grouse. We've looked at all these
raptors,
different things.
Raptors, hawks. All kinds of neat stuff.
I've had people call me, hey, I want a picture of a snowy owl or something. You know, and it's kind of like, well, I don't know. I run into them. It's not like I'm ever looking
here
for them, you know. And so it grew out of that. And it's grown into this, you know, okay, people want to come out and take a look.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture of a sharp-tailed grouse. I was sitting in my pickup scouting for deer hunting, and I watched these sharp-tailed grouse move right around my truck. They came right up a hill that I was sitting on, and they came around my truck. And the next thing you know, and I have a picture of it. It's one of my favorite pictures. I have a sharp-tailed grouse sitting on the side rails of my pickup box, and I took the picture in my mirror. That's of this grouch cool. standing there, and he's walked all the way up, and he's looking in my mirror at me, mm-hmm. taking a picture of him. And I took that and I showed it to this guy from one of the local little towns around here. He's quite a bird watcher, and him and his wife would actually take their vacations and go to the Amazon.
Yep.
Or, you know,
the Galapagos, all those kind of places. Yeah.
Just to look at birds and things. And when I showed him this picture of the sharp tail, he goes, can you go show me a sharp tail? And I'm going, you live like 20 minutes from where I took the picture. And he's going, but I don't know. I don't can't get out there and I don't have access.
Because you've got the access.
And
that's
so,
right.
You know, I called the landowner and said, hey, I'm going to go in. And, you know, and he goes, oh, he says, you're looking for deer now. And I'm going, no, actually this guy from town, he goes, oh, I know him. And he goes, yeah, take him up there. Show him some sharp tails. So I'm going, well, I don't know if I'm going to. You act like I know exactly where they're at.
They'll be behind the stump at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we went up and we walked down a creek bed and I got a mating pair up, you know.
Oh, man,
and
wow.
And he just thought that I was the greatest upland bird guide of all time.
Wow, going, you got to love it.
We got lucky, you know.
Well, folks with their bird books, right, the bird watching guys, I mean, we're talking golden eagles.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and I saw.
Yeah, we saw golden eagles. I mean, we're talking, you know, 4 feet tall and big wingspans. I mean, these aren't small things. And
well,
there's,
if I remember right, there was the other people in the boat with us said, "Are those turkeys?" Over
there? They're large. So
they
huge. You know, bald eagles, golden eagles, but golden eagles are not as easy to find. You know, they're not as popular as the and other raptors, all the different hawks. So all these things that they need to check off. You can run tour groups and groups to go see stuff and set them up in photo blinds or any of that stuff, right? So if that is the kind of thing you're into, Rusty's your guy, you'll see unique stuff because the way the Ice Age carved out the canyons, right? Some of these things are canyon dwellers, so you're going to have to use spotting scopes through your, you know, telephoto or have a telescoping thing. You'll see things you don't see in the pines and other places in Washington because they're using the canyon as protection, right? So it's a very unique area, and you have pretty open access to get people to places they can't get to with anybody else or by themselves. So that's one of the neat things about the HRO Adventures is you've figured out access, and now you can get them on these photo opportunities or whatever they want, right?
I think there is a thing out there I know it is with me as well when I'm touring around or, you know, going places.
Yeah.
There's something about, okay, well, the locals know where to go. The locals do this and that. And yes, a local can show you around. But I believe that people feel more comfortable when they're with somebody that is actually intentionally thought through what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. You know what a photographer is looking for. Yeah. You know what a tracker is looking for.
So, and I also know the landowner part.
Mm-hmm.
Being a landowner, growing up on the farm and still living, you know, half a mile from the house I grew up in, I'm part of the community around here.
Yeah.
And I have lived through trespassers and I lived through this kind of stuff and how to deal with it in the local authorities and different things. So I also know how the landowners have been either stepped on or gates left open, trash left out there.
Yeah. This is all part of being a steward too, right?
So they like the looking at me and saying, Rusty, you live just down the road.
Yeah.
I'm holding you responsible.
You're vetted and you're a landowner as well and you get it. Yeah.
And then as far as the clients go, they like somebody that they know is licensed and bonded that is out there looking out for them. And this is part
of you safe,
keeping you safe. Mm-hmm. And so I think HRO Adventures, it's one of those deals of why didn't we do this before? Why didn't we think about this before?
We've been doing it. We just didn't know we were doing it. Yeah.
And so why don't we provide something that people are looking for and that we can help them with?
So just some examples from yesterday, right? The phone was ringing off the hook while we were doing some stuff. But I sat back. I watched you build super memorable adventures for, say, the first guy I remember you talking with is a bachelor party group that wants to come up, stay in the cabins, have an outdoor experience, right? Yeah. Do some target shooting, do a couple other things. They're not interested in sort of the typical bachelor party activities. They want an experience out here. And in a 10-minute phone call, you built a custom thing, got them booked, and the amount of flexibility you have with what the customer wants, you can't find that anywhere else, right? Between your access, you speak all the languages, whether it's a photographer or a bird watcher, you know what I mean? A scientist, anybody that needs access to do what they're doing, you speak enough of the language that it's easy to tailor something. And that just seems neat. And then you did a, I think the call right after that was a, an out of, kind of out of the area corporate deal that this guy wants to reward some hardworking kind of executives or middle management people and wants to have an outdoor excursion with you rather than, you know, wing night at the wing place or something like that, right? Yeah. He's trying to treat his people right. He's calling you up. How the heck can I do this? And this is my budget. And again, in 15, 20 minutes, you built a package that made sense for everybody and just custom tailored. Everybody's getting a really neat experience out of it. So, you know, if you're thinking about ideas, I mean, just get on the phone, go to the website, call Rusty, tell him what you're trying to do, and he'll build you something. So yeah. It's pretty, how can they find you? What's the website?
HROAdventures.com. is the one that we've just got going, and we're starting to do that where we can really be flexible and put together packages for people. HiddenRanchOutfitters.com has been there for 25 years, and that one has all the hunts on it, has all the hunt prices on there. The photo galleries are all successful hunters, and so that one's been up there for a long time, but it's so much... The HRO Adventures really complements what we've been doing and how we've been doing it, but it allows the hunting and that to be separated from people that maybe aren't interested.
Yeah, it's not everybody's thing, right? Yeah. But there is still reason to come here and stuff to do.
Yeah.
And like we say in the name, right, HRO Adventures, I mean, whether you want to go see what the Ice Age did out here, some huge carved out canyons. And there's interesting wildlife that lives in those canyons for protection.
Yeah.
There's lakes to fish on.
That's one of those things.
There's just so many neat things.
That Ice Age deal was kind of a, you know, that one was funny how that one came to be. Born and raised here and farm around here. Mm-hmm. I thought it was punishment. Dad just called it farm work. but he would send us boys out to, you know, we'd take the tractor with the bucket on it and we'd have to drive across the fields and pick all the rocks off.
Good Lord. And this whole place is nothing but rock.
Yeah.
You'd try to put a tent stake somewhere.
Grandpa went past all the good ground and stopped here.
How it goes.
But we have all these erratics around here. We call them haystack rocks.
It's everywhere you go. The scenery is cooler than the last scenery you just saw. Yeah.
And then I was sitting in the government office, the USDA office in Spokane one time, the state office. And here's this book on the table, and it's talking about the Boulder Park. Go see all the erratics in Boulder Park, and it's a national monument. Well, it's in my neighbor's pasture.
Oh, wow.
And I did not know that. And you can go up, and from the county road, you can see down in there, and there is hundreds of these haystack rocks.
Oh, there's the whole drive here. It's one after another.
You can see a lot just driving down.
Yeah,
the road.
Beautiful. Beautiful sort of canyon kind of stuff with rivers in it.
When I bought a ranch up here 40 years ago, and with my dad, and we were driving around with the rancher. They had grown up with my dad, and so they knew each other. And we were trying to get the deal to take over the ranch, start farming it. And the two guys in the pickup, you know, I'm in there with the generation above me, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm the young guy in the pickup, and those two are sitting there talking, and all of a sudden the one guy hits me on the arm, and I says, man, you got a lot of haystack rocks on this field. And he goes, those aren't haystack rocks. He says, you know, the Indians, when they settled all this up here, he said, you know, they called them skunk rocks.
Hmm.
And I said, skunk rocks?
I've heard that term. I never knew what it was.
And
interesting.
I says, why would they call them skunk rocks? And he goes, because they're just another stinking rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, did I fall for that or what?
Yep, I have heard that joke. Yep.
So, but yeah, there's, and the Ice Age guys come up here, and some of the landowners up here know some of them because they come up and they mm-hmm. go and they study some things around here. We have some different geological things that, you know, I yeah. knew were different, but I didn't know why and mm-hmm. really didn't look into it, you know. And now the whole Ice Age flood theory that I've grown up with down here at Dry Falls, that story's changing again because yep. now they're figuring things out mm-hmm. and things weren't quite exactly the way they did. And they're finding things in different parts. And then Richard Waite, which is supposedly the guru and has put more years into studying this, really is, he's gotten to know some of the landowners around here, and I've yet to meet Richard. But I'm sure my dad time's coming. He's come up here and, you know, here he's written these books that are 30, 40 years old, and he's now discovering new discoveries. Yep. And I love that part.
Yeah.
I love that part that he thought he was dead right 40 years mm-hmm. ago, and now he's up here still studying, still being a scientist and going,
new stuff still popping
up.
I found
new stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You know, I live in this area, and so I take it for granted some of the cool stuff that happens around here. But I've already, you know, HRO Adventures kind of got started. I told one of my landowners that I lease hunting from. He's told the Ice Age group. They were the first ones to actually call me and say, okay, can you get us into this area?
Wow.
And the landowner, you know, he's thrown us out. He won't let us in and anything else, but we'd really like to do some studies. And so I went to that landowner, and he goes, they were trespassing. I caught him in there. I chased him out, yeah. you know, called the sheriff.
This That'll end your trip real quick.
I said, okay, well, I said, so what would it take to take these guys in there? And he goes, well, they're not going anywhere without me. And I said, well, how about, you know, can I represent
you
do because
it,
you're so busy? And mm-hmm. he goes, oh, I see where you're going with this. And so HRO Adventures has gotten us into accessing places.
That's the key,
that
right?
They couldn't get. It's just something that I can do to help out both sides.
Yeah. You know? It's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not, you know, I'm not going to become Elon Musk anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, we're coming up close on our time, but what I want to end with is if somebody books with you, and this is hunting, fishing, you know, geological stuff, wildlife stuff, tours, things like that, what can they expect as far as, I mean, we're sitting in some of your lodging options, right? Mm-hmm. So you got lodging, you've talked about you take people out, you have guides. I think you got it covered from, you know, getting to town to food to everything. So what can somebody expect when they do an adventure with you in sort of a generic sense, food, lodging, that kind of stuff? What do you have to offer?
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's funny that as you and I got together and my phone was ringing off the hook as we're trying to go put this whole program together, you got a unique look inside the inner sanctum, shall we say, of what I deal with on a daily
story of my life.
You know, you got this microcosm of what I deal with all the
showing
time.
Up on the wrong day dressed inappropriately. Yeah, that's kind of
listening to all this.
Yeah.
So what people can expect up here is, number one, with especially with HRO Adventures, has given us a lot broader spectrum to be able to work with people and do things. I've made some really good connections with the local resorts, with some of the local motels, and some of the local eateries that I can plan a group trip to those spots. There's a winery down here that has some cabins that if we need overflow, and that's a good place to go for tasting.
Yeah, I'm sure it's pretty.
We're also finding out, you know, I get guys that come up here and do the pheasant hunting or do some predator hunting or whatever, and they'll bring the family because we do have internet. You know, 20 years ago, nobody wanted. I don't want cell phone in. I don't want my internet. I want all unplugged. Well, 20 years later, some of those same guys are going, I have to have internet, you know, and I have to have cell coverage.
Yeah.
And so we're keeping up with all of that. So we have that. People can come here and do two things at once. Mm-hmm. Somebody can sit and just be relaxed, sleep in, and the other one can go hunting. So we have that flexibility, as you saw with that bachelor group.
Yeah.
And so we can kind of, you know, settle it up. We learned with that group that not all the group wants rustic lodging.
Yeah, and different ideas of what rustic means, right? Yeah.
Rustic was a little more rustic than they thought.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were, it was good to be able to accommodate them and put them into a more comfortable situation for them.
Yeah.
But then they could still come out here and experience the peasant.
Yeah.
The peasant
through your part. Connections and, you know, you've got a level of concierge service that is not, you know, I've done guided stuff in Alaska and in the South, and all great people, but, you know, not everybody has that gold key concierge. You leave feeling like you were treated like a king, and that wasn't what you were looking for, right?
Yeah.
And both you and Jackie, I mean, between the food options and just how you guys take care of people like family is pretty unique. And pair that with the just unparalleled access that you can get.
Yeah.
Well, just Jackie, really, it's such a neat experience to come out here.
You bring a great point. Jackie has catered a lot of stuff up here, and it's not the normal catering.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to do groups of 50 or 100, it's going to be back to that normal, what you would expect if you went to an event of that size.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're doing groups of, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15, we did a reality show shoot out here, and there were 17 in that group. We just catered everything right here at the cabins, the two farmhouses that we use. And the group was wonderful. A couple of the farms around us that we lease hunting ground from, or that we, you know, that I've grown up with, knowing these people, they know how to cook. There's a couple of there's one lady down the road here. Just she's actually the closest person.
Yeah.
Her mother. I always wanted to go work calves there and work cattle because we always stopped for lunch. And she always cooked lunch, and it was the best lunch ever.
Wow.
And so her mother was the greatest. And now she's retired, and so she's back here raising her horses and having a good time, and her husband are here. I actually had to call them in on one of these reality show shoots that we did that she came up. Well, she became the she was like a celebrity.
Everybody
wanted to eat her cookies and eat her pie. Yeah. And
we're
out there running around in the snow, freezing to death. And everybody's going, boy, that apple pie sure sounds good right now. I suppose she would have some of that left when we get back.
Isn't that funny how you work hard and, boy, these are the best scrambled eggs I've ever had, right? There's a direct correlation between the amount of output and effort. And, gosh, I've never had oranges like this before. It's always... I noticed that in the Boy Scout realm, right? Long hikes on the Pacific Crest Trail, and then they're eating Mountain House, and it's like a gourmet meal, and they can't stop talking about it. I'm thinking, you know, it has to do with your output, too. But, yeah, just some amazing food options that that she pulls off as kind of a one-person caterer. I mean, I know enough about it to know what goes into that kind of prep.
Like the deer hunters, you know. Mm-hmm. The deer is what drew them here to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The hospitality is what kept them coming.
Yeah,
wasn't, you know, our quality of deer here is not, we're not putting Boone and Crockett bucks on the ground, you know. And so, but I will say this.
They are amazing, though.
Our hospitality and the culture that we have put in here in our deal is all about bring your buddies, have a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and you've got years and years of style. Yeah, you have years and years of repeat customers that come from different states and need to come and be with you guys. And so,
it's all about being together, and we're here to take care of their group. That's exactly where the bachelor party's coming from, because they knew what we could do. And just something about bachelor party. I grew up in a time when that was not a...
It has different connotations.
It had a different connotation, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's neat that they would like to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it says a lot about kind of the younger generation is rediscovering outdoor stuff, right? If that's happening kind of right under our nose. So.
Well, and we offer, you know, with our accommodations here, with our cabins, that's where that corporate came in was it's so private and it's quiet and I'm not here hovering over them.
Yep.
We only provide what they need.
Yep.
And if all it is a place to come and be private, and you have a group and mm-hmm. you want to do some team building.
Yeah, you guys have done seminars and workshops, yeah. and it's a perfect place to be sort of off the grid and get your point across to your folks, right?
We've had customers, you know, people, mm-hmm. friends of ours that have come, or they're now friends of ours, that because of their celebrity status or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, if they walk down the street, somebody's going to bug them.
Yep.
So, but if you come here, you can take the kids, run around, yeah. play all you want, drive the roads. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to bug you. Nobody's going to stop you and ask for an autograph or whatever. So we offer a level of privacy that I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but just as we saw with the bachelor group that you were mentioning earlier, they needed a little more entertainment than what we were providing out there, the privacy. And so, you know, we took care of our part of it and they took care of it. You know, I pushed them towards talk to these people. They'll be able to help you with the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's small town community.
Yeah.
We're all small town business. We all take care of each mm-hmm. other and watch out for each other.
Yeah. I mean, it's full on Gold Key concierge service and a beautiful place and just tons of options for groups or private individuals or whatever you want. So, you know, give Rusty a call today. Tell us again where we can find you.
HROAdventures.com is that one website. The other one is HiddenRanchOutfitters.com. Either one of those lead right straight to me.
And Rusty answers the phone.
And as you found out,
there is no assistant.
And just for all you listeners out there, Dave made me hide my phone so that they would not bug us while we were on there. But give me a call, leave me a message. I text a lot. It seems to be a good way of having more than one conversation. Now, if I answer yours with somebody else's question, then I'll apologize and send you an emoji.
There you go. Well, Rusty, thanks for, including me in the HRO Adventure podcast. Happy to help. And it's a ton of fun and I appreciate your time. And also, you know, the hospitality, putting me up and feeding me and everything. So really appreciate it. If anybody, if this has sparked some interest, look him up, give him a phone call. There's definitely something out here for you. And I think what you'll find is, you'll go home remembering how these guys made you feel, right? And it's just an amazing location, amazing people. And if you're, slugging away in a cubicle and need an outdoor adventure, call Rusty. So, Rusty, thanks again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Dave. It was nice having you.
All right. Take care, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode.